Do you think I'm going to get in trouble for having a mohawk?
Do you have a mohawk?
I mean, it's a small one, but yeah.
From who?
From Ashley.
Oh.
I didn't even think about that until like a week ago and Jackie said something. And then I just thought about it now.
Eh.
I can comb it sideways. It looks like it's my business professional mohawk.
I was going to say like your Hitler Youth mohawk.
Yeah, that a little too.
I would say you should ask for forgiveness and not permission.
Oh, for sure. Well, I was going to do that anyways.
That goes without saying.
Yeah. I mean, that's just my mantra in life.
Right. Welcome to Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From Portland, Oregon, you are Richard Wally.
And from California, you are Cassidy Robinson. You said that with a weird inflection that time. Do you feel okay about it?
I feel medium about it. I think I skipped a word or something, but that's okay.
Yeah, we're good.
I'm kind of melting right now.
Yeah, I understand the feeling.
Yeah, I know we always talk about weather at the beginning of the show, and I wish to not.
Yeah.
But it has been weird here.
Well, I think it's because it's been so hot that we don't know what else to speak of, because that's the only thing that's on your mind.
Right, that's literally all I'm thinking about right now. I barely remember what movie we're talking about today.
Like, my last doctor appointment, I'd slept, like, maybe, like, 25 minutes the night mm-hmm. before, and so the whole time I ended up talking about how I have a hard time sleeping. It was bad.
Right.
So, I there are those moments, and so on the podcast when it's just, like, hot as, you know, just hot as heck. I'm sweating right now. Does that make you feel better?
It does.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Thank you for doing that for me.
You're welcome.
It was like super, super hot yesterday for like the first half of the day. It was like 90. And then the second half of the day, like this huge storm rolled in and it just like was a torrential downpour for like 45 minutes. And then but the cloud cover stayed. So it just trapped in all the heat from the first half of the day.
Oh, good.
And it never really cooled down. And it's cooler today than it was yesterday because the clouds finally went away, but it's still, it feels like probably what Portland feels like right now. It's just kind of swampy.
It's been like 90. The thing is, though, it hasn't been raining.
Mm-hmm.
It's rained the first time, like, in a while, like, a few months ago. It was bizarre. It's been horrible.
Mm. Yay for that.
Can we change the subject, please?
Yes. yesterday, I was driving around.
Okay.
Trying to find new food around the Mar Vista, Marina Del Rey area where I live.
Okay.
And I didn't find anything in particular, but I did find...
You don't use the Yelp?
I do. And it's like this terrible thing where I'm like driving and trying to like look up for food on my phone while I'm driving, while also trying to reconfigure the app so that it's the map app at the same... It's all really bad and I'm going to die a horrible car crash, probably.
Oh, well, you know, you can do that at home first.
Nope.
Go, oh, that looks... I sound like... It sounds like this. Doot, 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 doot. Oh, that's where I want to go. Ooh, and then you're there.
I don't have the teleportation app that apparently you phoned us.
I did skip a step, I suppose, but I think you knew, just because I speak in sound sometimes.
Right.
I think you understood those were footsteps out to the car.
That's you putting in the coordinates, and then boop is where you dematerialize and rematerialize in the Chipotle or whatever.
The Chipotle? I can teleport, and that's what I use it for? I mean, that does sound about right, but...
Right. What I was about to say is I found a big store that just sells giant cardboard boxes. And when you've just moved, you still have that, like, your brain is still triggering things. Like you see for sale signs or for rent signs, and like you don't even mean to, but you like it like triggers you. You're like, oh, you know what I mean? Or like when you're like on Craigslist or something and you see something, like, ooh. And so when I saw this big box thing, I was like, ooh, that's good to know. I'll remember that in however many months to years. But it also made me remember when in high school, we made speaking of teleportation device, we made a time machine out of a refrigerator box in your garage.
I thought we did it in my basement. Yeah, it was my basement.
It was your garage. Well, I mean, we put it in your basement, but we had to build it in your garage because we had to use a lot of spray paint. We went through like 6 mini cans of chrome silver.
I must not have done that then.
You were there. I remember because...
Did I just make you guys do it and watch?
No, you like... I remember because we went into your garage.
Maybe I huffed a lot of it and then did it. I don't remember this part at all.
We brought the box over because we got it from a TV store. And I think it was like a big refrigerator box or big screen TV or something like that. Back before there were flat screens.
It had to be a refrigerator.
Right, because it was really tall. But we also had to like, we had to make it taller. So I think we used like a smaller box and like cut a hole and tape it on top.
Okay. I just remember the contraption. It sat in my basement for a while.
Right. But you had like a onesie. Like, not the onesie you wear now.
No, yeah, I had a onesie from in high school I stole from the drama department because I would use it to do, like, techie stuff.
Uh-huh.
Because then I could just pull it off and go into actor mode.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in, but I really loved it. It was so comfortable.
So you've always had a thing for onesies.
I like jumpsuits. They're nice.
Right.
It's like just wearing pants, but you're not.
But all over your body.
Yes, it's wearing pants all over your body.
But yeah, I remember you slipped into that and you were like rearing to go and you ended up doing, I think you did do the majority of the spray painting. So you might have huffed a lot of that silver spray paint.
It makes sense. I mean, really.
And yeah, we like, it, you know, it makes it sound like we were in high school and we had about the minds of 7-year-olds and basically we did, but it was for a class assignment.
Yeah, it was for an English assignment. We had to do a project what we learned throughout the whole semester, throughout all the books and stuff. And so we decided to make a film, you know, just the most hard thing you could do.
Yeah. And it was like not particularly short. Like Keith, friend of the show, Keith Foster, he wrote the screenplay and it was like 30 pages.
It was probably like 30 minutes.
Yeah, if we'd been able to actually finish it.
Well, spoiler, it ended up on... Yeah, we didn't finish it. But that was a spoiler.
For technical reasons, and probably practical ones, too.
I think mostly, actually, technical reasons. Because what ended up happening is there was so much film on different tapes that there was no way we could get it all together to edit at that time. Because we just didn't have... Because we were... Also, at the same time, kind of technologically, you know, stupid.
Right.
I mean, it hasn't changed any. We just know how.
We're talking like mini 8 tapes, not like, you know, digital.
Right.
There was no cutting on like Movie Maker or Final Cut Pro back then. Like we would have had to do this with a VCR.
Oh, really? I didn't know it was that bad.
Oh, yeah. Like back then.
There was a lot of spray paint going on at that time for me, apparently.
But the big key thing is I remember that was in your basement, that time machine that we built. And it was dorky. It was fun looking. Christmas lights on it and, like, pop bottles, whatever. I remember I was really upset when you told me you threw it away.
Well, I had to. I was being yelled at, so I left it there as long as possible because I loved it.
It was your fort?
Well, I don't even think I used it. I just like going in there and seeing it. I like the idea of having a small time machine in my house. Like, I know it was fake, but part of me wanted it to be real.
Right. So that's my Throwback Thursday, if you're listening to this on Thursday, story. Today we're going to be talking about Marvel's Ant-Man. And at the end of the show, for our Netflix homework, we're going to be talking about Sam Raimi's The Simple Plan, which, inexplicably, neither of us had seen.
Yeah, sort of strange, right?
Right.
For different reasons, but it still doesn't make sense that I've never
seen it. Right, totally. At least seen parts or something, but yeah.
Should be, yeah, it seems like it should have been on TV or something.
I bet it was. But anyway, unless you have a story, should we move on to the news?
I have no stories.
I know. I figured you didn't. That's why I said that. That's why I told stories for you.
Thank you. Thank
I'll think of things that you, where I know you were there, even if you don't remember you being there.
Well, unless something's happening right now, it's not happening for me. I know it happened, but it's just not happening.
Okay. You're speaking like Dr. Seuss right now, so.
Well.
Let's go ahead and get into the movie news then, and I'll let you tell the first story.
The first story? Okay. Let's go to another beloved animated classic. They're ruining it. Disney just loves to do that lately. Sword in the Stone. Mm-hmm. They want to remake that live action. Apparently one of the Game of Thrones writers is coming in on it. They may or may not have approached Kenneth Branagh again. However, I'm going to assume they want to... Now, Sword in the Stone, I have a personal connection to this. This was always one of... Actually, a Disney movie I liked.
Yeah.
And I cannot see them doing the songs and all the other weird stuff, like turning into squirrels or fish. So I don't know how good this film could be. It seems dark.
How whimsical.
Yeah, like those were the best parts. Nobody gives a damn about anything else besides those parts. Now, if they go and they have like a wizard duel out in the forest and everything like that, that will be cool. But I need those things. Mm. If they and the songs. If they don't exist, I don't want to see this. I have very strong feelings about this actually particular Disney one.
I mean, if we're to judge from what they've done so far, which is Cinderella and Maleficent, they've managed to sneak in some of the whimsy in a way that I don't think particularly works very well, because it's inevitably it's like really CGI and cheesy and it's kind of tonally doesn't work, especially with Cinderella, in my opinion. But like there was like the mice and stuff. They just didn't have their own songs or their own story.
Well, then who cares? Like, I mean, if you just show fish, I can go to an aquarium for that. I don't need to, you know.
I mean, they might have the sequence where they turn into squirrels, but it probably won't be like a whole set piece like it was in the cartoon.
That must happen. Must.
This is going to be like when they remade Clash of the Titans, and we were really upset because they completely truncated Bubo the Owl.
Yeah, that was sad. That was a sad day for me. That was the only thing I was looking forward to on that remake.
Yeah, I wanted like a big, epic... like 20-foot Bubo.
Well, I think I wanted claymation too, and I don't know what I was thinking because I had seen the previews and I was like, oh, there's no claymation.
Right. Brian Cogman is the name of the guy, the Game of Thrones guy they're bringing on, and apparently he's like kind of the go-to guy right now because he did an adaptation of a YA fantasy novel called The False Prince for Paramount that eventually will be made. So that's in development as well. And so because he works on Game of Thrones, he's the fantasy guy right now.
Mm. He's the only guy in the whole world that knows fantasy.
The only one. Yeah. They didn't even go to George R. R. Martin.
No. None of those guys.
No. This guy here.
Well, that's too bad. What else do we got?
Well, you did one of mine, so I'll do one of yours.
No, I only have one more. We're only doing three.
I know. Okay. Jim Henson and Walden Media are doing a family-friendly holiday Krampus movie called Happy Krampus. And that's pretty much all I know about this. I'm reading the article right now. It says, this will be a fully live-action project and is based on an original idea by Keelan O'Rourke, who did Boy in the Bubble. The story follows Santa's forgotten helper and giver of coal to naughty children, Krampus. I don't know if that's totally the story of the Krampus.
There's
a little bit more to it than that. Yeah.
For some children, it's just he gives coal, but then there are numerous other children that he, you know, beats with switches or, drags them down to the depths of fiery hell.
Right.
I mean, they did skip over that part. But
they skipped over that part. They probably won't do it in this kid's movie. It says, who has lost his job at the North Pole due to modern parents spoiling their children, To prove to the world that he is still needed, Krampus travels to New York, where his plan to replace Christmas with Krampus Day. So it's basically the Grinch. How the Grinch stole Christmas.
Right. That's as soon as you told me what it was, I was like, I bet it's the Grinch who stole Christmas, but with the Krampus.
Yeah. Done with puppets, maybe.
Or they're going to get an actual Krampus. Either way.
Yeah, they'll conjure him.
Yes.
From northern Germany or wherever it's from.
It's really hard to get him, you know, contractual obligations and things like that, but...
Sure. We were talking before we started recording about how there's, like, the Krampus has sort of arrived. Like, right. Now there are a bunch of Krampus projects in the works.
Trick or Treat Guy's got a one coming out this year in December, I believe. It's a horror. I don't think it's an anthology. I think it's just about the Krampus. I mean, right. It could be, I guess. I guess he could be delivering pain and punishment to many a children.
Mm-hmm. And then there is an anthology movie, I know for certain, that involves a Krampus story as one of them.
Mm.
And I've seen the pictures. I think it's already actually been made, and it's about to come out at Fantastic Fest, is where it's going to premiere, this anthology horror.
Okay.
And it has multiple directors working on each segment. So, yeah, three Krampus movies in the works, or have been made.
Well, he needs to receive his due, apparently.
Apparently. Well, I remember, like, you know, however many years ago when it was just me, you, and Chris and Hillary and the other dorky people in our lives who were, like, nerding out about the Krampus.
Yes.
Mostly because one of us had lived in Germany for, you know, a significant amount of time and kind of brought the myth back with him.
Right. Well, I think he re-looked it up or something, too, because...
Right, yeah, yeah.
He's like, this was weird.
So, yeah.
Speaking about weird Germans...
oh, yes, good segue.
Yeah, I thought so. The Nosferatu director's head was stolen from his grave.
Mm-hmm.
Just straight taken right out of his memorial. Just his head. They didn't want the
whole
body.
His actual head.
Yes.
See, at first, I was kind of confused because I saw the picture that they used, mm-hmm. and it was he has, like, a bust on right. his grave. So I was like, oh, surely they just mean the... No. They mean his actual skull. F.W. Murnau. They took his skull. Somebody took his skull.
Well, what's interesting about this specifically is, too, is, like, they think it might have cult relations. It's exciting, almost. It sounds like a dumb horror movie. There were candle drippings all over the place near the site. So that's fun.
Maybe the grave robbers, it has nothing to do with, like, ritual. They just, like, are too poor to have, like, flashlights or use the flashlight app on their iPhone. So they just had to use candles.
I had a similar thought, but I thought it was maybe, like, aromatherapy. Like, maybe they're just, like, you know, maybe they're really not into graveyards or taking people's head. They just had some other weird, you know, reason. I don't know.
I don't know what that
their children
be.
Were being held hostage. Unless they got this head. I don't know.
Or it's like a really, really high stakes scavenger hunt.
Right. That's the ultimate piece. That's the last one. What's funny in the articles, too, or at least the one I read, it specifically cited that this wasn't their first case in this graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody did steal Charlie Chaplin's body. But they
really
found them 2 days ago.
Better guards at this graveyard.
Right. they probably shouldn't bury famous people there.
No, or just like remove their headstones at least.
Well, it might be. Well, I'm thinking too, it's like the family plots where you can like actually open the door and like you can like the tombs are right there. Like the caskets and stuff. So.
They didn't have to dig the body out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I mean, you know, we're joking, but this is like kind of fucked up.
Oh, no, it is completely.
Not
I
like,
mean, that's the only way to deal
I'm
with it.
I'm not worried that they're going to, like, conjure the Krampus or some other evil demon or anything like that. But, I mean, just on a, like, societal thing, it's like, who does this?
It's a little weird.
Yeah.
It'll probably end up in Guillermo del Toro's house.
Probably.
Where did I get this from? This is an interesting bauble.
And F.W. Murnau, you know, everybody thinks of it. They're really working the Nosferatu angle on the story because for obvious reasons.
Right.
But he also, like, directed Sunrise, which is in the Sight and Sounds top 10 So he wasn't, you know, he was, you know, a German expressionist, but he also made like a lot of other kinds of movies.
Sure.
And
was he a post World War II
transfer guy?
Kind of transfer.
I don't think so. I don't think he had much of an American career. I think he pretty much did German silent.
Okay.
I would have to look into it more, but yeah, I don't remember hearing about him having a post. I can look it up. I suppose.
No, you do what you want.
I mean, most people always talk, when you talk about him, it's either Sunrise or
You're supposed Nosferatu. To educate us. I'm not happy right. with this.
Well, I mean, fail you as a film historian if I didn't. It looks like the last movie he made was in 1931, and it was called Taboo, Stories of the South Seas. Yeah, it wasn't even that much later after he did Sunrise, which was only like 2 years before that. So, either he died or just quit making movies.
Well, yeah, there was that, you know, again, that World War II thing was kind of a big deal in Germany.
Right, yeah, that kind of fucked up a lot of things.
Yeah.
Well, that was probably around that time would have been when the takeover would have happened, and then they were only allowed to make state-officiated movies.
Yeah.
Goebbels and all of that, Leni Riefenstahl. Okay, well, let's go ahead now and get into the review. I feel like we've gotten here really quickly. When you don't do four news stories and then I end up cutting one of them.
You threw off the whole rhythm?
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you want to stop? Just like, maybe just beatbox?
I mean, I am like deliriously overheated, so it could be that. Like, I'm swimming in a pool of my own grime.
It could be just the perfect amount of like news stories, though, too. Because, I mean, you usually have to cut one, so...
Right.
But it's just an awkward amount to do with two people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get into Ant-Man, then.
Ant-Man happened.
Do you want to set it up, or I could?
Doesn't matter.
All right, I'll do it.
Okay.
Ant-Man is directed by Peyton Reed. And it was originally, we talked about this last week, I think, or the week before, about how for a little while, Edgar Wright was attached to direct this, and he and Joe Cornish actually did a pass on the screenplay, and kind of very publicly sort of got kicked out of the project, or, you know, had issues with the Marvel Studios, and they didn't see eye to eye on some things, and so he was eventually replaced. Peyton Reed has done mostly comedies, and a very kind of middle-of-the-road style of comedy, like The Breakup and Yes Man. Oh, he did do Down With Love, which I kind of like.
Didn't he do Bring It On or something, though, as well? Like, people like that one.
I've never seen that movie. and actually, it's the like 15-year anniversary of that movie, so there's a lot of Bring It On stuff online right now. But yeah, so Ant-Man is kind of a different take, I'm going to say, from the comics. Maybe you should have done the intro, because I just realized how little I know about the comic version of Ant-Man.
It's not, I mean, it's an adaptation, but I wouldn't say it's like wildly far and different. Beyond. Well, right. I mean, obviously, I mean, everybody knows that Hank Pym was part of the original Avengers, and I mean, that's really what set up his story. And I mean, it goes into wife beating and bipolar disorder and alternate personality disorders and stuff like that later. But I mean, they don't really go into much about his past, but they do kind of show that he's a little, you know, crotchety. So, I mean, and the Scott, specifically this iteration, I think comes more from a, there have been other Ant-Mans. There's been, this one who's Scott Lang, and then there's an O'Grady, I believe. And,
he's one of the few legacy characters in the Marvel Universe. Like, there's a ton of them in DC, like the Flash and Green Lantern and a bunch of them. Robin, yeah, but in the Marvel Universe,
Robin, that's weird.
They don't tend to do that much, but this is one of them. I kind of remember vaguely. I'm gonna guess that the story this sort of comes from the most, the Scott Lang story, was there was a sort of a joke title, I forget what the full title was. So something like
it was the Irredeemable
Act. The Irredeemable. I was going to say the Indescribable.
Well, it wasn't necessarily like a joke like that. It was a joke, like more comedic.
Right, yeah. I mean, character. But the basic conceit was that he was a thief who stole the Ant-Man suit and then, you know, sort of bumbled his way through learning how to use it and getting chased by police and blah, blah, blah. And so there's a lot of that in this story. In this movie, he's played by Paul Rudd. And we meet him in prison, actually, while he's on his last day to be released for doing some, I guess, white-collar crime, some white-collar thievery. But he's sort of a... what would you say? He's sort of a noble thief. So thinks of himself as a Robin Hood because he steals from the rich. And somehow he ends up on the radar of Hank Pym, played by Michael Douglas, who's, you know, age-appropriately older than him. And Michael Douglas is nervous about this technology that he built getting into the wrong hands by the company he eventually had to leave, which is now being headed by a very villainous Corey Stoll.
Well, pretty much almost the only Corey Stoll. The only other one I can think of is House of Cards, and there he's mostly just, you know,
sleazy.
He's, you know, fairly villainous most of the time.
Most of the time, yeah. Others might remember him as scene-stealing as Hemingway in Midnight in Paris.
Yeah.
But here, yeah, so Paul Rudd kind of gets inducted into this whole Ant-Man conspiracy thing where it ends up being basically becoming a heist movie where Paul Rudd and his low-level street thug friends, one played by Michael Peña, have to break into this place and, basically stop Corey Stoll's character from coming up with Ant-Man technology and using it for the wrong reasons. I would say of all of the Marvel movies that have come out in a long time, this is the most small scale. It's sort of an ant-sized movie, in a way, and at least an ant-sized story.
Well, it doesn't have to do with saving the world and stopping
or the universe.
Everything.
At no point, and I was very appreciative of this, at no point did they try and tie in Infinity Gauntlet. I was expecting, at some point, I was expecting Corey Stoll to just, like, a brief line of exposition, just be like, oh yeah, I devised my formula from this weird crystal we found.
That was one of the better ways. I was thinking of way different ways when you brought that up. I was like, how the hell would they do that? That's weird. But that's a pretty decent way.
Yeah, and I was expecting that, and I was going, oh, okay, Infinity Gauntlet. But no, this in a way, feels the most like a sidebar that we've gotten in a long time. And that is, in some ways, really frees up the narrative, because it doesn't feel so tied to all this continuity and all of these characters. They mentioned the Avengers a few times, and at one point we see what's his name?
Falcon.
Anthony Mackie, yeah. He was the highest level superhero we end up meeting in this movie. And, you know, the denouement ends up taking place in a six-year-old's bedroom. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird because I don't really have a lot to say about it. All I can think about it is while I was watching it, I thought, how much am I really enjoying this? And then I was like thinking about other Marvel movies, like just comparing it. And I was like, oh, I guess I like it better than that one. I do like it better than that one. Yeah, I like it better than The Last Avengers, that's for sure. I guess I like this movie.
I mean, okay, I'll just say it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I didn't have that experience. That's an interesting process of elimination you had there. But no, I mean, I thought it was super light and fun, and I was actually found it very refreshing that it wasn't tied to this, you know, world colliding things need to explode.
Epicness kind of the epic.
Yeah, and I mean, it was set on Earth, and I mean, it's funny because some people are like, well, it doesn't feel very superhero-ish, but to me it feels more because the weird sign, you know, like there's this whole weird subatomic verse that they go to. I don't know if that's I don't think that's a spoiler.
No, I mean, they mention it in the big, like, it's one of those movie moments where it's basically the equivalent of don't press the red button.
Right.
You know, like, you know, at some point somebody's going to press the red button.
Going to have to, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they go there And it's sort of this weird moment. I mean, it has a lot of idiosyncratic moments in it. And that might be, you know, a lot of people are being kind of, I think, divisive about their reviews of this movie. Being like, well, you can tell that it would have been better if Edgar Wright did it. And it's like, okay, cool story, bro. I mean, he didn't.
It's sort of a woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Yeah.
But there is a few moments in this movie where I definitely think they kept stuff from his screenplay. Or that they're trying to go a little bit for his style. There's these sequences, especially comedic sequences with Michael Pena, where he over-explains things involving, like, you know, the how-to of who told the other person who has a cousin who does da-da-da, where it does these quick flashes, and that reminds me very much of Edgar Wright's style.
Sure.
And I think that Peyton Reed is sort of biting it a little bit.
I think it's reminiscent, but I was glad that, like, because there was another moment in the movie where he's breaking into a safe, and there's kind of this montage of him putting stuff together, where that could have been an Edgar Wright, like, quick flip through, but they didn't do that. So I was kind of glad that he was, like, I mean, you could feel his touches in it, but they weren't just trying to, like, ape it. You know,
not all the way through. I mean, yeah. I would say if I had a major complaint about this movie is that I do kind of feel there's like two movies in this movie that are competing all the time. There's this kind of sincere superhero movie.
Right.
And then there's a little bit more of like a smart alecky comedy. And I think maybe it's a little bit better at being a comedy than it is when it's being a superhero movie.
Well, there's these weird, I know what you're talking about. It does this weird tonal thing where it literally shifts into like more of like, it is a moment where they're literally looking at the camera and being like, yeah, we're making fun of this moment.
Yeah.
Cause I can think of specifically, there's like this heart-filled moment between, Hank Pym and
his
estranged daughter.
Played and they're talking. Evangeline Lilly, who's from, Lost.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Paul Rudd breaks in the middle and does this weird little thing. And you're like, that's kind of broad. Like, it almost doesn't even make sense for his character to be doing that.
Breaks the tension of the scene. Yeah. And I kind of feel like, I don't know, when he did that in that scene, I kind of felt it did seem like unnecessary and a little too winky. Well, but at the same time, it kind of like underlined the fact that like the movie's not great at doing those moments.
Well, it's trying to be something a little different. And I kind of appreciated it just for being that, you know, being weird. I don't think it was particularly, I think this needed some time to be edited a little better. I think that there's some weird cuts, and I specifically think that there's some weird, like, timing things, because we go, in that same scene, we go from Paul Rudd out in the car talking about a situation to going back into the house immediately and talking about the situation.
Right.
And it's like there was no breathing room in between that scene. So there seems like it's just like I go out the car to leave and then I come back inside the house. Mm-hmm.
I feel like this might have went through a lot of editing in general or reshoots or something like that.
Well, they talked about I watched an interview and I think Peyton Reed said like his first cut was like 3 hours. But he was not going to make a film longer than he wanted a bit under two.
Right.
And so, but I know he didn't have a lot of time.
It feels like it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about on this very podcast the whole Edgar Wright situation when it just broke. And I think this was a rush production. And I think you can feel that. You talked about the timeline. There's also, like, I remember at one point, it feels like in the movie, Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas have only been training with each other for maybe like a week. Mm-hmm. And they're like, somebody mentioned in passing, oh, blah, 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 6 weeks or 4 months or something like that. And I was like, what? I was like, no way in hell. So that, yeah, I feel like there's a lot of,
there was a lot of places
I felt like got cinched up that would have let these characters breathe a little better.
Right. I thought it was just Disney logic. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, now we're there.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like because they're the parent company. I mean, just like movies sometimes do that where it's just like, yeah, this isn't realistic, but we did it. Get over it.
No. Yeah. But I mean, I felt like those scenes did exist, though.
Oh, no, for
sure. Like, you could tell that there were lots of things that hit the cutting room floor. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that it, like, ruins the movie or... And part of me sort of likes how light and quick it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is a very inoffensive movie-going experience because of that. I guess the reason why I had to go through my brain and really kind of think about how much I did or did not like it mm-hmm. is because a lot of it feels very inconsequential. And I don't mean like I need a giant black hole to open up somewhere and someone I'd have to fly through it and, you know, like that whole...
You just mean the stakes in general, don't you?
The stakes in general, the story in general, a lot of the emotional beats don't really work, so it's not like happening there either. So I think that's why I thought at its best, it's a pretty good comedy.
Like an action comedy kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, and I sort of like the special effects, and I definitely like how goofy they allow it to get. Like, he's flying on an ant.
Well, yeah, I like that they just go for it. They don't even try to, like, be like, yep, this isn't, like, weirdo throwback science fiction baloney stuff from, like, the 1960s, you know?
Yeah,
going back to, like, The Incredible Shrinking Man and Richard Matheson and that kind of stuff. I'm like, no, I wish they'd do more stuff in films like that. Who cares? It's not scientifically accurate.
I think I told the people I was with that this is the most unabashedly nerdy Marvel movie since the first Thor.
Sure. Well, I if you're talking about ranking system, because it's kind of hard not to with the Marvel films, when I got done with it, I was like, I think this is like right in the middle of all the films.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not my favorite, but it's definitely not my least favorite. It's right in the middle.
And Paul Rudd is always fun to watch, and he looks like he's having a good time in the movie. So does Michael Douglas. Corey Stoll is there.
I liked Corey Stoll. I mean, he's a good villain.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have a ton to do, and he's kind of underwritten. Actually, I kind of feel everybody's sort of underwritten in this movie, including Paul Rudd.
I feel like he could, yeah, I can see that. The only person I wouldn't say who's underwritten is the Hank Pym character.
Right, yeah.
Michael Douglas. Because you also get, the thing that I really was like, oh, I wish this film was kind of about that the whole time, was you have this flashback to him back in 89, and about his spy days and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like the whole time I was like, well, afterwards I was like, man, that's kind of cool. Because I wouldn't mind watching kind of like a more spy-esque version of this film. Like, I mean, I could see that going.
Well, there's a little bit of that in there. I mean, this whole heist plot, you know, I think they're sort of doing it on purpose, but a lot of it kind of feels a little bit like Mission Impossible.
It's more like industrial espionage almost. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I find it fun. I liked how everything looked still. It's funny because there's nothing offensive about this film in any way.
No.
So
yeah.
I for the most part enjoyed it. I would probably pop it in just every once in a while when I want to, you know.
I feel like this might end up being one of those Marvel movies or superhero movies that attracts a certain type of person who usually doesn't like superhero movies, but they, for whatever reason, really like this one.
Right. And there are a lot of side characters besides, I mean, Michael Pena is really funny.
He's great.
I liked the stepdad. I mean, there wasn't a lot there, but the Bobby Cannavale character. I liked the little aside with the Falcon, Anthony Mackie. It didn't feel shoehorned in. It felt very much a part of it. Like, it was like, oh, actually, that kind of makes sense. His weird Russian friend was fine. T.I. was fine. I liked them, actually, because I was like, oh, these are weird asides.
Mm-hmm.
Let's spend more time with him hanging out with these dudes. What's going on here?
Right.
Or just even them and Michael Douglas kind of interacting, because there are things that are very great about this, and then there are things that are kind of just mediocre. I wouldn't say there's anything offensively bad, though.
No, I felt like there was, it feels like it feels a little undercooked. Like, I felt like they could have spent a little bit more time with it, either on the screenplay level or in the editing room or somewhere. And they maybe could have, you know, pulled the strings a little or cinched something up here or cranked something out there to just make it run a little tighter and a little bit more efficiently.
Well, something I just learned about Marvel Studios specifically is the reason why they do so many reshoots afterwards is because they literally like plan it to do reshoots, because they're pretty, I guess they shoot a lot of footage and they're really loose when they're shooting the film.
Yeah.
But then in the editing room is when they like really ratchet it down. So if you take away from that time, I could see that kind of, you know, wearing on their model.
Yeah.
So to say.
And in a way, I feel like this is for them a low stakes project. Like, I don't think they really, I mean, obviously they want to make their money back, but I also feel like they thought, like, this is sort of a bridge film to get to the next thing.
Well, I think they could kind of think of about it as a breath, even, you know.
Yeah.
Not needing to go to Avengers straight into Civil War.
Right. And like I've said, I liked it more than the last Avengers movie.
Right.
Kind of by a lot.
I think I did, too. I need to see the Avengers movie again, honestly. I just felt like things were happening at me the whole, like, every, just happening. And I can't remember almost anything about that film.
No, me either. This one is very idiosyncratic, and it has a personality. It's a little bit of a Shaggy Dog, but I don't know. I more or less enjoyed it.
Right. This was a strange, I think if you like the Marvel films, you'll be fine, like, seeing this, and you'll enjoy
it. Yeah, there's enough here to like.
I think if you were really, I don't know, if you're really disappointed about the Edgar Wright thing, don't see it. Because you're just going to be disappointed because it's not exactly Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at the same time, if you go in with those, I mean, you've already got an idea in your head what you want this film to be if you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I
mean, the movie does, in defense of the people who are complaining, the movie does remind you. Like, well, they didn't have to do that. Like, it was obvious that they were specifically making reference to, you know, they even include their names in the credits as story, you know, super.
Well, story, they still gave him on script, and they also gave Edgar Wright an executive producer credit, which I don't think they had any need to do that. Like, I mean, I think that was just out of trying to be nice or whatever.
Right.
Or trying to,
consolation, you know, prize.
Well, a consolation, or just trying to kind of, you know, throw some dirt over the burning coals.
Maybe, yeah.
But I think if you just kind of enjoy superheroes or even kind of throwback science fiction, it's a fun time.
Yeah, or if you're just a fan of these actors. Like, if you like watching Paul Rudd be kind of, you know, goofy and whatever. Like, there's a lot of that in there.
If you want to see Paul Rudd, you should see this film.
Yeah.
Right.
I enjoyed it. And it'll be interesting. It's always, you know, the tag on all of this is it'll be interesting to see how he fits in with the MCU when he eventually gets integrated into the Avengers.
Well, that is one thing, too, that's kind of cool about this is that little scene that they always add in at the end, or
shawarma.
They normally do,
shawarma
scenes or whatever. This is one that I actually was like, oh, this actually does give you more of a hint towards the story and actually tells you something. This isn't just Howard the Duck. Because I feel like a lot of their little Easter eggs at the end haven't been like that nearly as good as the first ones. And these ones, and this one kind of is actually like substantive, to the continuing story. So I was into it. I mean, both of them, I guess there were two really that were.
Yeah. And now they make you wait like a lot. Like you think you're done. It's not just, you better stay for the whole thing.
Right.
And which sucks, because then now any action movie, you're like, there's like a part of you is like, should I stay?
I was commenting that, like, on the credits, they actually have it instead of like in single file, they have two lines on both sides running down, and like the digital, like they packed all the digital like artists into this little like tight paragraph, and they usually don't do that. So I was kind of amused by that, but. I was like, oh, they heard people bitching. That's funny.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move into our last film, which is Sam Raimi's A Simple Plan. And I'll let you set that up.
Simple Plan is directed by Sam Raimi. You already said that. You stole my thunder. But it stars Bill Paxton, Billy Bob Thornton, and Bridget Fonda are some of the main characters, as well as Brent Briscoe. He's kind of one of those guys you see around a lot, but
character actor.
Yeah. So this is just about this is kind of an inconsequential movie as well. that kind of big things happen. There do seem to be more stakes in this film, though, I will say.
I would say,
basically, these two really stupid guys and this one, you know, of average intelligence, but probably just as stupid, might as well just be just as stupid as the other characters. They find this big bag of money in a plane crash out in the middle of the woods. And they decide not to tell anybody and just kind of sit on it and see if anybody comes knocking. Well, things unfold and family drama and friendship drama and all that kind of stuff kind of plays into this kind of thriller-esque, like, plotting against each other, almost like Macbeth kind of style, but in Wisconsin. So, you know, it's kind of a friendly plotting, I guess. But no, this film, it's a lot of fun, actually. I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed seeing, like, a film that could be fun, but that is, like, rated R.
Right.
Because there's definitely some, like, graphic violence, crows pecking out eyeballs, things like that.
There's a pretty, I mean, I don't want to give anything away, but there ends up being a pretty big body count by the end of the movie.
Yeah, and it's fairly dark humor. And it does definitely go there. But there's something about this film that just, it feels from that period. And it's just really a fun watch. Mm-hmm. And I think the humor is right on for some reason. There's a lot of films I see Billy Bob Thornton in, and I'm not like a huge fan of his. But whenever he's really stupid, I absolutely love him.
Billy Bob Thornton actually was nominated for an Oscar for this movie.
I could see why, you know.
Yeah, I actually, you know, beyond just being stupid or kind of simple.
Well, there's a full emotional range to it, is what I was thinking.
Of all of the characters, he has the most to do in this movie. And he has the most nuance, and he gets some really, really good monologues, and he delivers it like crazy. Like, we forget, I think we take Billy Bob Thornton for granted because he has been in so many bad movies, or he's been in just, you know, the parts that don't really match him very well. But this, like, this is one that does.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot of The Man Who Wasn't There, the Coen Brothers movie.
Right, yeah.
In which you told me last week, and I didn't know this, that Sam Raimi and the Coen Brothers are, like, friends. And so this film just makes complete sense. And yeah, this
came
definitely
out in 1998, which was about 2 years after Fargo, which was another kind of bags of money movie.
Well, this is also like, but I mean, the thing I was getting at is this is definitely feels like a Sam Raimi movie, though. Even though it is a similar, I would say, idea to a Coen Brothers movie, like you can feel like his voice in the actual movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, I would say that it's his most sober film. Like, I would say that the thing that he's most known for, this kind of hyperactive visual style and that kind of stuff, is the most sheathed here than in probably the rest of the body of work that I've noticed.
Well, there are some moments, especially with emotion, that really, when you say that, really make me think, yeah, that's very true, because they, because a lot of times with his emotions, they feel almost still gaggy. Like, yeah. And in these ones, I was like, oh, that's sad.
And there's definitely a larger kind of morality play that's playing out here. I mean, this is basically like Fargo. It's sort of a snowbound noir.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's funny that in Fargo, you have Frances McDormand, who's the pregnant noir detective. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, you have Bridget Fonda's the pregnant noir femme fatale.
Right.
But yeah, this to me feels like the most like him. I don't know. It's hard to say this without it sounding like coming off the wrong way, but I feel like this is the most like him, like really going for it. Like,
you mean like this is one of his like more,
like really attempting to become a serious, in inverted commas, director. And I don't mean serious as in tone. I mean serious as in I want to be taken seriously.
Oh, you mean like this is like his, like, I don't know, his more serious project. I mean, I see that. It's still funny. It's still him. But it definitely has some question. It asks questions. And I think it actually is very successful in doing exactly that. I think that if you do watch this film, this might be a sin to some people, but I probably enjoyed it just about as much as the first time I watched Fargo.
Yeah, I would say too. I would say that objectively speaking, I think that Fargo is a better movie. There's a lot of times in the writing I feel that it's a little on the nose, like the characters literally say the themes of the movie in the dialogue.
Sure.
More than once, but I think the actors are really, really good in here, and I think that, you know, the tension he builds, it's like classic kind of Hitchcockian setups. Of just, you know, something like Bill Paxton has to grab a gun, but he doesn't have the right bullets and he has very little time to find him. So he just shoves them in his pocket and later he's trying to like load, like, you know, it all works. Like it's really simple kind of filmmaking, but it, you know, you can ratchet up tension with doing very, very little. Mm-hmm. This is also one of the most subtle, Danny Elfman scores.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah. Didn't even realize that. That's how subtle it was.
Yeah.
I didn't hear the rising swell in the background.
Right. You didn't hear like a big a chorus of.
Yeah, I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
No, I actually did. I think this is a really fun, like nice little movie. I guess it's not very nice at all. It feels nice. It feels quaint.
It goes down easy. It is pretty violent. And I would say somewhat nihilistic in that. Kind of classic noir, nobody wins sort of way.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, completely and utterly. I have nothing but like nice things to really say about the film.
Enjoyed it.
I see what you're saying objectively about Fargo being a little better because of the things you mentioned, but I wouldn't necessarily discredit the film for that.
No, it's a good double feature, that's for sure. And then if you want to make it a triple feature, you can watch Danny Boyle's Shallow Grave in the middle.
That's true.
And do the whole Bags of Money trilogy.
Yeah, that would be quite a day.
But if you find, you know, millions of dollars in a satchel, just don't. Like,
well, what about a little bit?
No.
I mean, just a little bit.
Like, if it's over $1,000, even then, like,
are you sure,
never
Cassidy?
Works out for people.
In the movies. That's just the movies, though, Cassidy. I don't know, like when he puts it on the table, because he asked her that question and then he puts it on the table. And I thought that was a wonderful scene because I was like, yeah, that's true.
It's, you know, it's a lot easier to say that you wouldn't until you're actually looking at it and touching it. Yeah.
Yeah. Until you're thinking about, well, that would pay this, 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 and this. I could easily do this.
Mm.
It made it feel very palpable and real. And I think it asked more questions in just doing that than anything. And I was like, oh, man.
Right. It was actually.
I'm not a moral person. I just found this out through this film. Thank you, Sam Raimi. I'd be stealing that money. And yeah, I'd just kill them all.
But yeah.
That got too dark. I'm sorry. Cut that.
You would be Christopher Eccleston chopping people's arms off and whatever.
I'm living in the ceiling, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Drilling holes, watching you. Yeah, more or less.
I enjoyed this a lot. I'd say definitely watch it, especially on Netflix. And, you know, watching people stomp around in the snow in this weather, like maybe psychosomatically.
Felt nice.
Felt okay.
Well, at least we found a reason to really like it.
Yeah.
It's very cold looking. We loved it.
Put that on the cover. And I don't know what the whole situation is with the show next week, if there will be one or not. You're going to be in Idaho already, but the next time we end up recording, whenever that is, could be a week, could be 2 weeks, we will watch the documentary Pussy Riot.
Oh, is that what we're doing? Fun.
Yeah, that's what I picked. I assumed you hadn't seen it before.
It's funny because I've almost seen it like 20 times, but I just never have just pushed play. So, okay, right. Good.
Yeah. About an all-girl punk rock band in Russia who goes to jail.
Yeah.
For
being an all-girl punk rock band.
Punk rock band, yeah. Where fighting the man actually has consequences in some places.
Yes.
But yeah, so whenever we end up recording again, we will talk about Pussy Riot. If I end up doing a show with somebody else next week, whoever it is, we will not talk about that movie. And maybe if you follow us on Facebook, you'll find out what we do end up talking about. If you have anything to say about anything that we talked about in this episode, whether it be A Simple Plan or Ant-Man, where you would rank it in the Marvel Cinematic Universe or whatever, you can contact us at our email, which is jabberandthedrone@gmail.com. Like I said before, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast and see all the news stories we don't talk about, as well as you can suggest your own Netflix homework or just comment on some of the things we post, episodes, whatever. You can also find us on Twitter at jabberpodcast, and if we get more responses and likes and stuff on Twitter, I promise to start using it. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, and if you're there, please leave us a star rating and a one-sentence review. We're also searchable under Pocket Cast, the Zune, and Windows Podcast Network. You can read my weekly movie reviews that I do for the Idaho State Journal at saladworkreviews.blogspot.com. You can see some of the stuff that Richard's posted over at his blog, rdwally.weebly.com. You can also see some of the reviews I've written for the Seattle-based movie website MacGuffin at macguff.in/author/Cassidy. I believe I'll have a review posting here in the next few days for a documentary I reviewed called Do I Sound Gay? I thought about talking about that on the podcast. I still might. We'll see what happens. Listen to Brad, Amanda, and Alyssa over at their podcast, Quarter Life Crisis, at quartercrisis.podbean.com. And be sure to listen to Leland, our friend over in Olympia, Washington, at dampercast.com. And check out Patrick and his dad over at Make Dad Read Comics. Until then, we'll talk to you maybe next week, maybe in a couple weeks, maybe longer. We'll see.
Don't find us. We'll find you. No, that's not true. Please don't do that. Please look for us all the time.
At all moments. Refresh constantly.
We may have content.
From the point.
At any moment.
Say you've stopped listening to this. Just keep hitting refresh until there's a new episode.
Don't eat. Don't sleep. Just
talk to you later.
Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.